So in this world that the CEO of NVIDIA is sort of painting here, he sees the need for traditional programmers, the people that can write the code that talks directly to the CPU and GPU, but that is going to be a very small subset of people. The predominant group of people that are going to quote unquote program are going to be the ones that are using plain English, talking directly to the LLMs.
Yeah, we've been talking about the future a lot recently. Yeah, and I think, just after we last recorded our previous recording about generative AI, all of a sudden you're like, hey, the next day I got this NVIDIA article that the CEO just wants to just upend the entire software development world.
Top to bottom. Yeah, there's this headline, NVIDIA wants to rewrite the software development stack from the ground up. And this isn't like other languages that have come out where it's sort of an iteration on.
Yeah, just trying to get more abstracted away from, like, what used to be assembly to machine learning to, or machine learning with the SAL
Yeah.
to like C, C++, and then like fourth generation being SQL, and then fifth generation right now being like Prolog or something like that.
Yeah. It this is there's an element to that, but really what the CEO is saying is he wants developers to no longer interact directly with the CPU, which is throughout all of computer science history, that is essentially what it has been, is taking a problem and then writing instructions that can be interpreted by the processor.
Yeah, whether it be highly optimized or in a very specific way, yeah,
He wants that to,
like it's ignore all that, right? It's just like, just tell me the problem and let me solve
let
it.
me figure it out. Yeah. People, I think, are dismissing this as a, oh, it's just the next evolution and it's just one more level on top of what you've already described. And even the CEO of NVIDIA recognizes that. They're like, yeah, like people are using our software to write Python, but what if they weren't writing Python? And what if we didn't even create Python? What if we created a language that was written against our CUDA cores, which we'll get into a little bit. And that is how you interacted with a computer. Let's forget the CPU. The CPU is old, it's archaic, it's limited in terms of how many things it can do at one time. The GPU has this amazing intrinsic ability to do a million things all at once with no loss of performance. And this goes back all the way to 2007 when they originally like said, hey, we're gonna start investing billions of dollars into these CUDA cores, is because he, at the time we were looking back at it as like, oh, they're doing this for gamers, or oh, they're doing this for Bitcoin mining. It's like, no, he was doing this because he saw this coming, the future of AI and this logical thinking.
And I'll say, when I was in college around this time, and our software development was it software development lifecycle class? I forget what it was exactly called, but we had to do a project in the course, and one of the people there, they really wanted to understand CUDA, so they centered their project around getting a GPU and understanding CUDA and all the things we can do to hyper thread and hyper optimize processing.
Yeah. So in this world that the CEO of NVIDIA is sort of painting here, he sees the need for traditional programmers, the people that can write the code that talks directly to the CPU and GPU, but that is going to be a very small subset of people. The predominant group of people that are going to quote unquote program are going to be the ones that are using plain English, talking directly to the LLMs.
And those
And
people that are going to be interacting with the GPU or CUDA, like they're not going to be, the normal C sharp Java developers. Like these are going to be the low-ish level, the C, C++,
Hyper
because you need
specialized,
to
yeah.
hyper specialize and hyper understand how to manipulate all that information.
Yeah. So right now, he basically says in this article, this is a quote from the CEO, 10 million people right now are gainfully employed because of their ability to talk to computers. That leaves 8 billion people.
And talking to computers is just programming.
Programming, yeah. That's what he says. This new generation of programming is going to open up that to the other 8 billion people. So from somebody that's part of the 10 million, I look at this change and I'm like kind of worried.
Yeah.
But he's looking at it and saying, no, this is going to make what you do today accessible to everyone. Anybody that who can speak to somebody and articulate a problem in plain English will be able to benefit from the power of these LLMs and these GPU SDKs that NVIDIA is going to make and make undoubtedly trillions of dollars from.
So I think a little bit in looking at this, right? So the other idea in all this is, like you said, the English language. And there's, just to put a distinction here, like there's a difference between the natural language processor and then there's the LLM, right? Because the LLM is the brain. The natural language processor is really the part that's, when you're saying, okay, I would like it to do this, that's the thing that's interpreting and figuring out, okay, when I go to the brain, now what do I got to do next?
Yeah. One of the quotes from this article, you know, generative AI will be more, will become more of an operating system, and humans can tell computers in plain language to create applications. So mm-hmm. I'm thinking, this is crazy, but like I'm just spitballing here, but imagine you turn on your computer that runs the NVIDIA operating yeah. system and you say, I need a program that I can generate, that I can edit photos on or something, and I need to be able to optimize for X, Y, and Z, and then it creates you the program that you need.
I would argue that it'd probably be even easier than that. Hey, I've got this picture, and I need to have it
make it look better. Yeah, yeah. Here's a picture. Make me a program that can edit this. Yeah, it's crazy. Like, just the idea of that of an AI model becoming an operating system, or you no longer go to a marketplace to buy software. You ask your operating system to construct software for yeah. you, and software that can evolve. And this has the potential to be extraordinarily disruptive to every single software company that operates. So yeah, part of this is to make it more accessible. You know, you go from 10 million people being able to call to 8 billion. That is a good thing. It'll be disruptive, but overall it is a good thing. The idea of what an operating system is or what a program is, all these things are going to kind of be put on its head, and programs will be created in real time as you need them. But mm-hmm. Imagine this fluid operating system that can create these programs for you, interacting with these things using English or whatever your native language is, as opposed to even some high level programming language.
Yep.
It's disruptive, but it's good. And I don't know.
And I think they're thinking that's going to take, I think in this article, they said about 5 years.
5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. 5 freaking years. Another thing to consider too, like it's not like this is 10, 20 years down the road. It's that
yeah, it's not your retirement age.
Yeah. You're going to start seeing companies like Apple and even Windows create operating systems that have models built into it, not just for things like Copilot where you can ask it a question, it can give you text.
And honestly, the predecessor to that was Cortana, which wasn't great at all. But yeah. I mean, but like you can see that they've, even that starting from Windows 8? Till now, like clearly there's already been a movement toward this and getting people familiar, the consumer familiar with these ideas.
Yeah.
And Copilot, I think, is just now they're shoving it with the most recent Windows 11 update, I think.
NVIDIA, so Huang said that programmers are still going to be needed, right? We all know that. But they're like only for our CUDA framework.
Yeah.
For general purpose computer algorithms, you don't need... And for general purpose computing applications that don't need GPUs. So like, you know, there's still a world where you got these little rinky dink apps that, you know, just write a Python script for.
Mm-hmm.
But in this article, his message is clear. The future of AI and the future is AI of software and hardware, and developers need to quickly adapt their skill set to the changing landscape.
Yeah.
So what is this look like for a developer right now? Like, what should we all go run out and go get a license to NVIDIA's CUDA SDK and start coding on GPUs?
start learning C++ if you haven't yet. No. So one thing I just want to make a distinction first is like, what is the definition of an algorithmic program? Right. So that's really something that is, it's predefined, right? So it's a set of rules. I mean, if you really think about it, everything that we write in some fashion is a bunch of if-else conditions.
Yeah.
Like, that is considered an algorithm. You know, if you give it input, it's going to give you some known output every single time.
Yeah, there's a word for that.
Algorithmic?
Idempotent. Isn't that the idea?
Idempotent. You get the same thing you put in is the same thing you get out.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how many times you run it, it's going to be the same thing every time. That is generally how we write code. We don't want the outcome to be different when we ask it the same question over and over again.
Right. And yeah, and again, we build these rules to make that happen.
This
is going to be a lot more conceptual. I mean, I would hope that we're going to get the same results if you ask it the same question in and out.
I don't think so. I really don't think so. Because even if you look at ChatGPT and you ask it the same question twice in a row, it gives you a slightly different
variation of it.
A variation of it, yeah.
Yeah. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, the main data, like, you know, what was today's high temperature?
Yeah. But if you ask it, like, how do I, you know, here's all the data from, like, traffic in the city.
What's my best route to get home or something?
Or I'm thinking from an infrastructure standpoint, redefine the roads to optimize for traffic.
Oh, so that answer is call my nephew and complain to him and then never tell him thank you.
Your nephew does roads for...
Yeah, he was a traffic engineer for the Wisconsin DOT, and my sister-in-law's dad, there was a intersection off North Avenue Freeway that was just way too long. So then he complained to my nephew over and over again, and then he changed the light. And because of the way my sister-in-law's dad is, she's like, never expect a thank you from him. Never said a word about it, even though that made him the happiest ever, because now he didn't have to wait for that super long light there.
That's awesome. But, like, those are examples of, I think, the types of problems where you would expect and almost want a different outcome. Because as more data is processed, as it becomes more intelligent,
or as traffic flow changes too,
you're going to get a better response. Yeah. So this could flip, like, the way we test software on its head too, because how do you test an output that is variable?
Yeah,
you probably need AI to validate it to some degree.
Yeah, there's another guy I was watching recently. He was working on some framework, and he was too lazy to write all the possible permutations of what he needed to. And he needed a brute force test for whatever he was processing. And he ended up going to an AI and asking it, like, hey, you know what? Here's kind of some sample tests, and I need a brute force testing framework for this method, whatever it is. He's like, yeah. And it found problems, because once he did it, it started producing negative numbers, and the application was never supposed to produce negative. But, like, the amount of time that would have taken him to produce that, this was able to just throw it out at him.
I was just thinking about something. The other thing this does is it adds more value to the data that is being collected on all the devices and sites we use. Right now, data is generally used for marketing. Most data agreements you sign with a SaaS product, it's, hey, can we use this data to, like, give you better advertisements?
Yeah.
As the laws start to shape, because what a lot of people probably don't realize is the way that these LLMs are trained is they scrape data. They essentially steal data.
Anything that's open public. So watch our previous video on data security.
Yeah.
Securing your API endpoints, because if you don't have it secured, it's going to just get it and it's going to read what it can.
It will.
Or like you said, scraping it.
So companies like ChatGPT and all these other LLMs, they're brokering large scale contracts with these companies to essentially collect this data. So that'll probably result in the cost of these LLMs to go up, because generally cost is just passed through to the consumer. But what it also does is it puts a premium on the data on good data that can be collected and made valuable. So I would suspect for SaaS companies, prices to go down for their service offerings, because they have they're incentivized to bring more people into their product,
mm-hmm.
to collect more data and to sell that data. So I would expect the cost of software as a service to come down and the cost of using these LLMs to go up.
What I'm really curious about is, and maybe this is the alternative extreme of, in the case of an NVIDIA operating system, the keystroke watching,
oh, you're,
the screenshot watching. Like, so, like, why even do that and have You know, because creating these LLMs in the first place, like, you know, they're millions of dollars to create.
Yep.
So why not just try to recoup that by watching what somebody's doing and then cut and personalize the advertisements?
Chrome already does that. I don't know if you realize that, but they basically screen capture everything you do, and they do it.
Good thing I don't use Chrome.
They do it under the guise of it's and anytime you're presented with a CAPTCHA, it's because it failed to use the data that it records from your keystrokes and your mouse movements to determine if you're a human. So if when you use Chrome, you're essentially consenting to them observing everywhere you go, how you click, what you interact with. And if they can determine you're a human based on that information, that you bypass the CAPTCHA. If you don't, your movements weren't human enough.
Yeah. Or there's some sort of blocker in your device.
Yeah. But you're already doing that, and you probably didn't know, which means you probably won't know when the, you know, Windows or Apple starts doing keylogging on their and capturing all that, all the website traffic you go to, all the files you have on your computer. I mean, that's another thing too. Like, the thing about these LLMs is you can train it with very, very raw data.
Mm-hmm. And you can fine tune it yourself with it very. So what's actually a popular thing right now is mixing models and blending them together. And there's a, and we're not going to get into that right now, but like to get those better different results, like, it's very simple to do.
Yeah, and they might, what they'll probably do is they'll probably have these LLMs do the processing locally so that your data is never like sent outside of your device. And then the semantic data, or like the higher level data that they produce as a result of processing it, like what are your behaviors, what are your interests, what are your likes, that will be the data that
your persona.
Yeah, your persona. That will be the data that will be transmitted. But I would suspect to see major shifts in how companies value and sell data.
Mm-hmm.
And there might be an immediate, oh, this is great. Like, Amazon doesn't need to charge me for watching movies anymore. They don't need ads as a revenue stream. So now this is all free. But the more I watch these movies, the more of this data is getting sent to companies like ChatGPT to refine their LLMs to provide better services.
What? I mean, I would hate this. But what would be interesting would be, because they try this in video games, right? Is the green screens in video games that you can get personalized ads while you're playing, and then they would just place them in there. But like the same thing for movies, like the movies are just put in with just,
oh yeah,
empty things, and then like as you watch it, then it's just the subliminal.
Yeah, I used to play Rocket League, and they did that. Like in the background, they had advertisements for Mobile One or some other companies.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's in the background, you don't even really see it, but like your brain is like,
it still processes it. I know it was like another racing game, and I know like what, in 2016 there's presidential ads that were shoved into the game.
I would suspect data collection is going to be huge. And you know, if you're thinking about what field to go into, I would encourage you to go some, and we talked about them in the last video, and we'll have a link to it probably at the end of this one, go into something that's data oriented.
Yes.
Like, don't go into like a traditional full stack program, especially if you're in high school or you're just starting college. Get your computer science degree, learn algorithms, learn data structures, data. Like this whole idea of like data centric apps is, it's going to, I don't know how to say this other than, when we started coding, data was like dirty sludge.
You like there's a premium on sanitization.
Yeah, like
we were the janitors of data, of databases.
Yeah, like you didn't really think about data. It's like, I'm going to collect some data, I'm going to write some data. Data is basically just long-term memory. That's all it is. Now, like, applications aren't built on top of the raw sludge. They're built on top of data that's been processed and treated and refined, and it's business oriented. So the full stack part, everything above that is now built using AI and low code tools. So it's almost like the value has been shifted. Everybody, like, data is where companies are spending most of their time and energy, because they realize that if I don't have good data, I don't have good apps. I don't have good.
You can't do anything, or it's difficult to do things.
Yeah,
like that.
I have no business intelligence that I can act on. Yeah.
And we can see that. I think we talked about some of our other videos, but again, the data warehouse, data lakes, getting things moving in that way. So, like, even where the data is stored is being more and more abstracted away.
Yeah.
So, I mean, with this, like, how do you feel about the future with all this coming out?
I have no clue. I see this being extraordinarily disruptive. I don't know what the future is for people like me who have like built a craft on the .NET framework. I'll be interested to see what Microsoft does. This Copilot thing is great, but it's like,
it's a stepping stone.
What NVIDIA is doing is transformative. It's like when BlackBerry and Apple were competing. BlackBerry was just trying to innovate on what a phone was at the time, mm-hmm. making it slightly better. Apple just said, screw everything. We're going to rethink this from the ground up. We're at a point where we have to do that. NVIDIA is the only one really doing it.
Like, or at least they're the most vocal ones about it.
Everybody else is kind of waiting to see like how is this going to play for them. But what the mistake there is as these developers start building with these SDKs that are proprietary to NVIDIA's CUDA cores, they're sort of cementing market cap in
right,
that space.
Because, yeah, and I think that's what they mentioned in this article too, right? Is as you start building those LLMs, like even the LLMs, they're going to be fine-tuned for CUDA.
It's going to be
hard. Use CUDA. Yeah. They're not going to use something. They're not going to use the different architecture.
So you're going to see Microsoft and Apple start building hardware in this space. I think Intel is going to be left in the dust. AMD is going to be left in the dust. I don't think they're. I think their day is done. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they'll come in with something great. But you're going to see people like Microsoft and Apple that have this really established hardware or software or infrastructure. Start to dabble into that that processing space, and it'll be interesting to see who wins. I don't know. My money is still on NVIDIA, literally and figuratively. I believe strongly that they're going to win this battle, and I don't know what that means for like the .NET developer that works in Azure or the the Node developer that works in AWS. What does that look like in 20 years?
I'm wondering if these monopolies of companies that are going to start. You know, after however many years that they've been on top, that's going to start changing.
Oh yeah, like the open source. Yeah, we need to
because Facebook's trying to get into the space too.
Yeah.
So, or sorry, Meta.
Meta's model isn't to innovate though; it's to acquire. Like, so we'll wait to see until they buy somebody. Anything they've ever been good at, they've always like bought a startup or
company. Well, I mean, but they've been trying to get into the space to some degree though. Yeah. So. I'm optimistic. I think this is gonna, well, I mean, I don't know, maybe not for myself, but I think it's gonna be a really cool thing.
Yeah, it'll be very game changing.
It'd be very personalized too, I think, for a lot of people.
I'm just picturing a world where I can just, if I need a program, I can just ask my computer to make it. And as a developer, I kind of already have that power. I can create something from nothing.
It just takes you longer to do it.
But I can do it now. I'll be able to do it so much faster. And the startup ecosystem will probably be hyper accelerated. There's probably going to be another bubble coming of like apps that were accelerated through AI. It'll be impressive to watch.
And I think honestly, if I don't know. Maybe this is back to the dystopian way, maybe, or maybe utopian way of if everyone has a AI partner like this that's able to kind of build these things for you or handle this mental load, like what does that do with relationships in the future?
We'll
like
just
from a social aspect.
My AI will talk to your AI.
Yeah. And then see if we can talk with
each
other.
See if we can talk to each other. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll have my guy call your guy. Got it.
We'll have links to the article in the description if you guys have questions or comments.
Ask.
Or
we're
hot
here
takes.
To talk about it.
Yeah, we'd love to hear it. But you got a $1 trillion company that's waging war against... You have a $2 trillion company waging war against the full-stack software development ecosystem. They're probably going to...
They're ready for this.
Yeah.